Debbie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC, 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. This is Democracy Now!
We can save a lot of people. I mean, some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff. I see it. And you can't fake that.
As President Trump contradicts the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, acknowledging there's real starvation in Gaza, the world's leading hunger monitor is warning the worst-case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. We'll speak to a whistleblower who worked with the U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. He resigned after witnessing Palestinians being shot dead as they sought food at aid sites. Then to Jan Egeland, the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, one of the largest independent aid groups in Gaza. And we go to Israel, where two leading human rights groups, B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel, have accused Israel of committing genocide.
The report we are publishing today is one we never imagined we would have to write. But in recent months, we have been witnessing a reality that has left us no choice but to acknowledge the truth. Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have shot and killed at least 62 people across the Gaza Strip since dawn today, including 19 people seeking food. The latest killings bring Gaza's official death toll since October 2023 to over 60,000, though that number is believed to be a vast undercount. Meanwhile, the world's leading hunger monitoring system warned the worst-case scenario of famine is playing out in the Gaza Strip, with widespread starvation, malnutrition, and disease driving a rise in hunger-related deaths. The Integrated Food Security Phase classification warns the only path to stopping further deaths and catastrophic human suffering is for Israel to allow for the unimpeded, large-scale flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. On Monday, Palestinians holding empty pots and pans gathered at a soup kitchen in Gaza City, hoping for a meal.
We are living in this apartment and I wish we were safe. We have mosquitoes from one side and fleas from the other side. My whole body has fleas. I can't get medicine for myself nor go get treatment. I go from soup kitchen to another to provide food for my children instead of getting treatment for myself. My small child, who is 3 years old, has pus in his leg. I can't go get him treatment because I have to provide food for him first.
The governments of Germany and Spain said Monday they'll airdrop humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip in cooperation with Jordan. But officials admitted the amount of aid they can provide pales in comparison to Gaza's starvation crisis. Meanwhile, President Trump has broken from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who declared Sunday, quote, there is no starvation in Gaza. On Monday, Trump said he'd seen images of Palestinians on TV and that, quote, those children look very hungry, unquote. Trump later described scenes of, quote, real starvation. Israel's security cabinet's considering a proposal to annex parts of the Gaza Strip. That's according to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, which reports Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's annexation bid is part of an effort to prevent the resignation of far-right Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, who in May declared, quote, we are finally going to conquer the Gaza Strip. We are no longer afraid of the word occupation, unquote. At the United Nations, Saudi Arabia and France have opened a three-day conference conference aimed at recognizing Palestinian statehood as part of an effort to end Israel's assault on Gaza. Already 147 of the UN's 193 member states recognize the state of Palestine, though not the United States nor its allies in the G7 group of powerful nations. Ahead of this week's conference, U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee mocked France's planned September recognition of Palestine as, quote, the new nation of Frankenstein. U.S. human rights defender Chris Small says he was physically assaulted in Israeli custody after he was abducted by Israeli forces who raided their Gaza-bound humanitarian aid vessel, the Handala, in international waters Saturday. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition says Smalls was choked and kicked in the legs with visible signs of violence on his neck and back, and that this level of force was not used on the other activists. Smalls was the only black crew member of the Handala, which was carrying baby formula, diapers, food, and medicine. Meanwhile, in Greece, protesters on the island of Rhodes scuffled with riot police as they were demonstrating against the war in Gaza, while an Israeli cruise ship was docked. This is one of the protesters.
The killings and the embargo that is happening in Gaza must stop. The people are starving. We demand a reaction from the rest of the world, and that Israel does not operate on the backs of NATO and the West with what it's doing right now. This is murder.
In the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot and killed the Palestinian activist and teacher Odeh Mohammed Halalin in a village near Hebron on Monday. He played a key role in the production of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, which follows Palestinians in the community of Masafer Yatta as they struggle to stay on their land amidst violent attacks by Israeli settlers. Residents identified Hadalin's killer as Yinon Levy, an Israeli settler who was put on a European Union sanctions list last year for his violent attacks on Palestinians and their property. The Trump administration earlier this year lifted the Biden-era U.S. sanctions on Levy. Video appears to show him brandishing and firing a handgun at Palestinians ahead of Monday's fatal attack. Palestinian journalist and No Other Land co-director Basil Adra mourned Hadalin's killing, writing, quote, "This is how Israel erases us, one life at a time," he said. In Ukraine, Russian strikes have hit a prison in Zaporizhia, killing 17 people and wounding 42. A hospital in the Dnipro region was also hit, killing three people, including a pregnant woman. The attacks come as President Trump moved up his deadline for Russia to agree to a ceasefire deal from 50 days to about 10 or 12 days. Here in New York, a gunman wielding a semi-automatic assault rifle walked into a Midtown Manhattan skyscraper Monday evening and opened fire, killing four people before fatally turning the gun on himself. Police identified the shooter as 27-year-old Shane Tamura of Las Vegas, who reportedly drove across the U.S. to carry out the attack.
The building security camera footage shows the shooter enter the lobby, turn right, and immediately open fire on an NYPD officer. He then shoots a woman who took cover behind a pillar and proceeds through the lobby, spraying it with gunfire.
Tamara was a competitive football player who appeared to be targeting the National Football League's corporate offices. The league has confirmed one employee was critically injured. Tamara had a license to carry a concealed weapon in Nevada. He reportedly carried a suicide note stating grievances with the NFL and saying he suffered from the brain disease CTE, which is linked to head trauma. Meanwhile, in Reno, Nevada, a gunman killed three people at a casino resort Monday morning, leaving several others injured in a spray of gunfire before police officers shot him dead. Investigators are still searching for a motive. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 254 mass shootings across the United States so far this year. A federal judge has ruled the Trump administration and Congress cannot block Planned Parenthood from receiving Medicaid payments. In its lawsuit, Planned Parenthood claimed it would have had to close nearly 200 clinics in 24 states without Medicaid funds, which would cut off care to over 1 million patients. Nearly half of Planned Parenthood's patients are on Medicaid. Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator and convicted sex trafficker, Ghislaine Maxwell, is appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn her conviction. Maxwell is claiming she's ineligible to be prosecuted due to a 2007 plea deal struck between Epstein and then Florida prosecutor Alex Acosta, whom Trump later named as labor secretary, who has then had to resign because of the Epstein scandal. Meanwhile, President Trump is looking to force Wall Street Journal owner Rupert Murdoch to give a deposition within the next 2 weeks as part of Trump's defamation lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal. Trump seeking $10 billion after denying the Journal's report that Trump signed a birthday card to Epstein with a sexually suggestive drawing of a woman. On Monday, Trump gave new details about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, telling reporters in Scotland he ended their friendship because Epstein, quote, stole workers away from me, unquote.
I never had the privilege of going to his island, and I did turn it down, but a lot of people in Palm Beach were invited to his island. In one of my very good moments, I turned it down.
Oklahoma's superintendent of public instruction is facing scrutiny for screening explicit images of nude women in his office television during a meeting of the Oklahoma Board of Education. Ryan Walters previously faced backlash for promoting Bibles endorsed by President Trump on Oklahoma public school students. A third whistleblower has stepped forward with evidence that federal judicial nominee Emil Bovee lied to senators during his confirmation hearing last month. Staffer Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Chuck Grassley met Monday with lawyers for the whistleblower. This follows two prior whistleblower complaints alleging that while serving as a senior Justice Department official, Bovee ordered subordinates to ignore judicial orders that undermine Trump's agenda. Despite those complaints, North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis said Monday his yes vote remains unchanged, likely giving Bovee enough support for his confirmation. Bovee is Donald Trump's former personal criminal defense attorney, nominated to a lifetime appointment on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. A panel of federal judges in Albany, New York, has declined to appoint President Trump's interim U.S. attorney for the Northern District of New York to a permanent position. Monday's announcement means the 120-day interim appointment of John Sarcone III will expire unless Trump nominates him again. During his brief tenure, Sarcone retaliated against the Albany Times Union for reporting that he listed a boarded-up residence as his home address and accused an undocumented immigrant of trying to kill him, a claim refuted by surveillance video. Meanwhile, federal courts in New Jersey have halted criminal trials and grand jury proceedings amidst questions about Trump's appointment of his former personal attorney, Alina Habba, to serve as acting U.S. attorney. Habba had been serving as interim U.S. attorney until her appointment was due to expire last week when a panel of district judges selected veteran New Jersey prosecutor Desiree Grace to replace her. But Trump's Justice Department quickly fired Grace and named Habba as her replacement, setting off confusion about whether she's disqualified from holding the job. Trump has formally nominated only a quarter of the U.S. attorneys who serve in 85 federal districts. And the director, Christopher Nolan, is facing criticism for shooting his upcoming film, The Odyssey, in the Western Sahara city of Dakhla, which remains under occupation by Morocco. Local activists and the organizers of Fi Sahara, the Western Saharan International Film Festival, warn the production normalizes Morocco's repression of the indigenous Sahrawi people who face torture and forced disappearances after holding nonviolent protests. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The worst case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. That's the dire warning issued today by the world's leading hunger monitor. This comes as the official death toll in Gaza has topped 60,000, but that's widely viewed to be a vast undercount. At least 147 Palestinians, including 88 children, have starved to death. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has denied there's any starvation in Gaza. But on Monday, President Trump contradicted Netanyahu's claim.
We can save a lot of people. I mean, some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff. I see it. And you can't fake that.
In related news, a group of at least 21 U.S. senators has written to Secretary of State Marco Rubio, urging the U.S. to stop funding the shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which was created to take over aid deliveries in Gaza, replacing the United Nations. Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen is the lead author of the letter. He appeared on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday and said the aid sites have been turned into death traps.
American taxpayers should not be spending one penny to fund this private organization backed by mercenaries and by the IDF that has become a death trap. Over 1,000 people have died from being shot and killed as starving people crowd to try to get food at just these four sites.
We're joined now in Raleigh, North Carolina, by Anthony Aguilar, a whistleblower who worked as a subcontractor in Gaza as part of the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid delivery operation. He resigned from his job with UG Solutions after witnessing Palestinians being fatally shot as they sought food at aid sites. Anthony Aguilar is a retired lieutenant colonel who served for 25 years in the U.S. Army Special Forces as a Green Beret. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us on Democracy Now! Can you start off by talking about your experience in Gaza and telling us exactly what you saw?
Thank you. It's an honor to be here and to share this story. I do not call this my story. I call this the story of the oppressed, the story of the Palestinians in Gaza who are dying at the hands of starvation and violence. What I witnessed in Gaza, I can only describe as a dystopian post-apocalyptic wasteland. We, the United States, are complicit. We are involved hand in hand in the atrocities and the genocide that is currently undergoing in Gaza. For anyone who says that there is no starvation or mass hunger, or that not only are we at the precipice, but we have stepped over the line of wide-scale famine, to anyone says who it says that that's not happening, shame on you. Shame on you. It's inhumane. What I witnessed in Gaza at all four distribution sites, I didn't just go to one for a photo op. I didn't go to one to watch a distribution and then say, yes, this looks great. I spent days on end in Gaza at all four distribution sites, at Karim Shalom, where the aid is loaded for distribution, and at both operation centers that control the daily convoys, logistics, operations, and distribution for the four sites. What I saw on the sites, around the sites, to and from the sites, can be described as nothing but war crimes, crimes against humanity, violations of international law. This is not hyperbole. This is not platitudes or drama. This is the truth. I break that down by what I would describe as the sites themselves. I spoke to Senator Van Hollen last week, and we had a very frank discussion on the status of the sites and what's at these sites. The sites have not only become death traps, they were designed as death traps. All four distribution locations were intentionally, deliberately constructed, planned, and built in the middle of an active combat zone. Some may argue, well, all of Gaza is a war zone. That may be true, But there are parts of Gaza that are direct or that are determined to be active operational combat zones where Israeli defense forces are operating. Those sites were built in the middle of those areas intentionally. It's not by accident. That in and of itself, to designate humanitarian distribution sites to service an unarmed, starving population, to build them deliberately in an active combat zone, is a violation of the Geneva Convention protocols. It's a violation of humanitarian law. And in my opinion, it's a violation of humanity in general. The sites, not only where they were built, all four sites around the perimeter and the roads leading in and out are barricaded by razor wire. Not barbed wire, not concertina wire that we use in warfare for obstacle obstruction or for paths. Razor wire. Geneva Conventions specifically prohibit the use of razor wire to restrict areas that civilians are servicing. Hospitals, water points, food distribution points. And we're using it. Not only did the IDF provide it for us to use it on the sites, we, UG Solutions, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, asked for it specifically. Razor wire is designed to maim and kill. And we're using that to channelize and herd, if you will, thousands of unarmed, starving civilians. That's a war crime. The actions on the sites, escalation of force, no standard operating procedures to dictate that. No rules of engagement provided to the armed contractors on the ground. The indiscriminate use of force, lethal and non-lethal, against unarmed civilians. I want to make that clear. We aren't there on the distribution sites defending ourselves against Hamas. We are using indiscriminate force, targeting civilians, escalation of force that goes far beyond the measures of appropriate against an unarmed, starving population. The equipment that we were issued, fully automatic weapons, which in and of itself is not a violation of protocol. However, we were issued M855 green-tipped ammunition. That's important because green-tipped ammunition is a steel-jacketed copper round that's specifically designed to penetrate armor. It's designed to kill. It's designed to shoot through reinforced objects to kill someone on the other side of it. That's what all the UG Solutions contractors are equipped with right now in country. Everyone carries a standard basic load of 210 rounds of M855 armor-piercing military combat ammunition. Why would anyone need that? Even if to defend themselves defend their lives against an unarmed population. It's inappropriate. That in and of itself, that action there is a war crime. I'd call the status of us being in the country. Every UG Solutions contract American, U.S. citizens in Israel that are armed with fully automatic weapons in Gaza as we speak today, right now, and have been since the 26th of May. We are in the country on a B2 entry visa as tourists. We're in the country as tourists. So if a family member wanted to go to Israel to visit Jerusalem, they would enter Israel on a tourist visa. That's the legal status that armed American citizens are in Gaza right now with the authority to use hostile force against an unarmed civilian on a tourist visa. That is a violation of humanitarian international law, period. The things that I just described are not just opinions, they're facts. The sites were designed to lure, bait, aid, and kill. The food that we distribute, nowhere near enough. To Mr. Johnny Moore, shame on you for celebrating 92 million meals delivered into Gaza. Shame on you. It's a very simple equation. 92 divided by 2.2 million people, divided by 3 million or 3 meals a day. That's what GHF proclaims. We've been distributing aid since the 26th of May. 26th May to now the 29th of June. 64 days of continuous distribution. And we've only managed to distribute 92 million meals. When you break that down, again, it's a simple equation. That's 14 days of meals. So out of 64 days, we provided 14 days of meals to the entire population in the enclave of Gaza. That's inhumane. That would be like saying that you only eat every fourth day. You only eat on Thursday and you only eat on Monday. And to say that that's humanitarian? So to anyone that says that that's enough or not even close to enough, the narrative of GHF needs help to do the rest, you don't need help because you're not anywhere close to where we need to be. The fact is the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is not trained, equipped, manned, or staffed to run humanitarian aid and humanitarian assistance of this magnitude. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation needs to be defunded, shut down, and the United Nations needs to be allowed back in full scale, supported by the United States, resourced, helped. Instead of giving the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation $60 million, use that $60 million to support the United Nations mechanism to get 400 sites back to operating, to feed 2.1 million people every day. That was the capacity of the United Nations. So what I saw in Gaza, to me, concerns me as an American. What we are doing in Gaza in being complicit with what the Israeli Defense Forces are doing is un-American. I didn't come forward to talk because I want to disregard the struggle and the fight. I stand with Israel against Hamas in their atrocities. The world stands with Israel against Hamas in their atrocities. No one would argue that October 7th wasn't atrocious. But if we as a nation, the United States and Israel, our closest, one of our closest allies, if we go down the road of saying we're doing what Hamas did and saying that that's okay, we are losing our humanity and we cannot go down that road. It's un-American. It's not in line with our values. 2 months ago, I hung up my uniform after 25 years of service to this nation. I didn't hang up my oath. I swore an oath to the Constitution. I didn't swear an oath to the president, to the Congress, to a boss, to a contract, to a paycheck. I swore an oath to the Constitution of the United States of America. And that Constitution is underlined in American values, dignity, respect, respect for human life. Right now, America is on a dangerous road. And if we don't stop now, end this, and back the humanitarian aid process that should be going into Gaza, shame on us. Un-American. I'm going to make sure the truth is known.
Anthony Aguilar is a retired Lieutenant Colonel, Green Beret. As he said, 25 years of service in the U.S. military, was awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star in combat in 2005. How did you come to work at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation? How were you recruited? Who were you exactly working for? Are you considered a U.S. government employee? Were you?
I was not considered a U.S. government employee. I was specifically hired as an independent subcontractor under UG Solutions, which held this subcontract under the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, specifically for the armed security and protection of the aid. I was contacted by UG Solutions on the 13th of May. They were specifically looking for recently retired military personnel who had special operations background. So I was contacted by them for that reason and asked if I would be interested in joining UG Solutions on this operation.
The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has dismissed your testimony, Anthony, accusing you of making false claims with no basis in reality. The GHF said, quote, "It should be emphasized that Mr. Aguilar was employed as a subcontractor and was fired over a month ago for inappropriate behavior. Following the dismissal, we received threats that unless he was reinstated, action would be taken against us, raising questions regarding the motivation behind his interviews. We also have evidence that he likely forged documents and presented misleading videos to promote his false narrative." Again, this is the accusation of the GHF. Can you respond to what they've said and talk about the videos that they're talking about?
What I find interesting about stating that the claims I make have no basis in reality, I provided videos. Those videos have been analyzed in their metadata and geolocation. In fact, UG Solutions themselves posted one of my videos on their press release website showing the exact same thing, stating, here's the whole story. Simply just showing what the video showed with UG Solutions contractors shooting at civilians. It's outlandish. Back to the question of me being fired or not. When I was, the short period of time that I was on contract, 41 days I was on contract. In that short period of time, UG Solutions promoted me twice, gave me a pay raise twice, asked me to take on more and more responsibility, relied on me for my expertise. I terminated my employment on the 13th of June in writing. I terminated that employment under the clear reasons that I could no longer be a part of this unethical, inhumane operation. After I tendered my resignation on the 13th of June, UG Solutions asked me to stay, to reconsider. They continued to pay me for an entire pay period. They continued to cover my life insurance. They continued to pay for all of my expenses until the 26th of June. If UG Solutions terminated me or fired me on the 13th of June, why would they continue to pay me my full pay, my coverage, and pay for all my expenses through the 26th of June, asking me to stay and reconsider my position? I wasn't fired. I resigned because I could no longer be a part of it. In terms of performance, all of the operations, the convoy operation plans, the distribution plans, the operational plans, I generated. I wrote them for UG Solutions because they did not have anyone on their staff who had the requisite experience, knowledge, and expertise to do that type of work. So you're welcome, UG Solutions. You're welcome, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, because if it weren't for me and other contractors that have skill, former Green Berets, former veterans, if it weren't for us, they're doing the work, you wouldn't be able to operate at all. No one in the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, from Johnny Moore to Phil Riley of SRS to Jameson Giovanni of UG Solutions, have any experience in in-depth planning and operational planning, period, much less for a humanitarian assistance mission. They're understaffed, they're underqualified, and they're in way over their head for a mission that they should not have.
I just want to explain to people, according to the New York Times, Johnny Moore is a former Trump campaign advisor, was appointed to the board of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Moore was co-chair of the 2016 Trump presidential campaign's Evangelical Advisory Board and an influential figure during Trump's first administration. He was part of a coalition of Christian leaders who paid regular visits to the White House as well as prayer meetings in the Oval Office. His PR company, Kairos, was acquired in 2022 by JDA Worldwide. He now serves as president of that larger firm. When he announced the acquisition on social media, Moore referred to his work in public relations as his day job, as he has had many other roles and projects linked to his faith and interest in foreign policy, including writing books on the persecution of Christians in the Middle East and Africa. He told the New York Times he and other evangelicals had pressed Trump to recognize Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem and to move the U.S. embassy there. He, like many evangelicals, including Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, is committed to a Jewish state based on his interpretation of the Bible. I wanted to go to one of the videos you shared with the BBC showing armed American guards working with GHF opening fire at an aid site in Gaza on May 29th. This is a short excerpt.
I think you hit one.
That's what we hear someone saying. Who is saying that, Anthony? And describe what we're seeing and hearing in this video. Who is firing? Who are they shooting at?
In that video, the firing that you hear is gunfire from an assault rifle being fired by a UG Solutions independent security contractor. That individual is firing at a group of unarmed civilians who have left the site. That is distribution site number 4 in the central, up in central Gaza near the Nesserim corridor. The Palestinians had left the site. They were moving south back towards the bridge over Wadi Gaza, back into Barish, where the town they came from. This individual was shooting at them, at their feet, over their heads, into the crowd. You hear the clear and distinct American voice in the shooting. That shooting is very close to that camera where I am standing. I filmed that video. Not Hamas, not the Gaza Health Ministry, not some biased agent news media outlet. I filmed that. An American. That individual that's shooting, you hear him clearly say, "Woohoo!" Cheering. And the response from the other contractor on the ground who was standing about 15 feet from me, who says, "I think you got one." And at the same time, the other contractor then responds with, "Hell yeah, boy." What they're talking about is the got one is a human being, a civilian, an unarmed, starving civilian who came to our site to get food, who is returning home. Why did we shoot at him? Because we wanted them to leave faster. That video is genuine. It's been time-stamped analyzed. It's been geolocated. It's been the metadata has been assessed. In fact, UG Solutions themselves posted that exact same video on their press release page to refute the video itself. So they used the video that I filmed to refute the video that I filmed.
So UG Solutions, who you worked for, is a U.S. mercenary firm. GHF distribution sites are guarded by two U.S. security firms, Safe Reach Solutions, SRS, and UG Solutions, SRS, run by a former high-ranking CIA officer tied to a U.S. private equity firm in Chicago, according to Middle East Eye. How did you get recruited?
Again, so I was not recruited by Safe Reach Solutions or the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. I didn't work for them. I was a subcontractor specifically under UG Solutions. UG Solutions is located in Davidson, North Carolina. So they were first reaching out to retired special operators, special operations forces soldiers who had that specific skill set, who were local to North Carolina, because it would have been quicker and easier to recruit them and get them onboarded. So I was called by UG Solutions when the operation was first explained to me. I felt that it was a noble cause. One thing that I will agree with Johnny Moore in this, one thing he has said early on, there is nothing more Christian than feeding people. I would agree with that. What I don't agree with is that what we're doing is not that. Lying, covering the truth under the auspice of feeding people for profit. Remember, these are private organizations. The person in charge of Safe Reach Solutions is a former CIA officer and part of a private equity firm. That's who we have in charge of distributing humanitarian aid to a starving population. So when I first went into this, I was excited. I felt it was a noble cause. Within hours of being in Israel and seeing how this was going to unfold, I immediately had dire concerns as to the intentions, as to the execution, and what was going to happen when this fails.
Did other people share your feelings? And is it accurate to call you, though you're a former retired Green Beret, lieutenant colonel in special forces for years, is it accurate to call you a mercenary as you worked with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation?
So I would not refer to myself as a mercenary, nor would I refer to myself as a whistleblower. I'm a patriotic American who wants America to know the truth. When I took this contract to go on this mission, my motivations were clear. I wanted to use my years of expertise, my experience in planning, my experience in executing operations of a large-scale magnitude to contribute to this mission succeeding. That's what I wanted. I recently had retired. Thoroughly enjoyed being a stay-at-home dad, watching the Golden Girls in the afternoon and enjoying my afternoon walks with my dog. Enjoyed that. I didn't take on this mission for personal gain or money. I took on this mission because I believed in it. I resigned my contract and left. Walked away from the money. And they were paying us a lot of money. Walked away from that money because nothing is going to buy my soul. Nothing is going to pay for my values and my patriotism as an American. I'm an American first. I'm not a contractor. I'm not a mercenary. I'm not a whistleblower. I'm a patriotic American that wants the American people to know the truth of what we were involved in a very complex and complicated environment that, quite frankly, right now, we are on the wrong side of history.
We're going to end it there, but I want to just be very clear. You saw former U.S. military, you saw IDF, you saw the Israeli soldiers opening fire on hungry Palestinians.
Without a doubt, yes. Full stop.
Anthony Aguilar worked as a subcontractor with UG Solutions with the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, a delivery operation, so-called. Retired lieutenant colonel, served for 25 years in the U.S. Army Special Forces as a Green Beret, has been awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star. Thank you for joining us. Coming up, Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. Stay with us.
He was her only child, her baby boy. She was his second daughter, a father's pride and joy. Somebody's mother, brother, best friend, sister, lover. Maybe an A1 student running, hiding, taking cover. The women gather, crying tears that fill a million oceans. It doesn't matter where you're living. The women gather.
Sweet Honey in the Rock in our Democracy Now! Firehouse studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed there is no starvation in Gaza.
Israel is presented as though we are applying a campaign of starvation in Gaza. What a bold-faced lie. There is no policy of starvation in Gaza, and there is no starvation in Gaza.
Well, today, the world's leading hunger monitor issued a dire warning, saying, quote, the worst-case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. Unquote. To talk more about the humanitarian catastrophe, we're joined by Jan Egeland, Secretary General of Norwegian Refugee Council, one of the largest independent aid organizations in Gaza. Jan, welcome back to Democracy Now! First respond to the Israeli Prime Minister saying there is no starvation in Gaza.
Well, he's in a minority of one in this world, really. Well, maybe together with his right-wing extremists in his government, to claim that. He hasn't been in Gaza and seen the starving children. I've been there. I've seen them. So people from all nations all over the world, including from Norway, my own country, who have gone there, we have had a historic relationship since we were campaigning for the creation of the State of Israel. We see the truth. And I think it's important for the American public to really understand that when I say the fingerprints of the U.S. policy and the other European countries that provide arms to Israel's campaign in Gaza is contributing to war crimes. And I think your historically important interview with the lieutenant colonel from the Green Berets Special Forces, who told everything that he saw, which is a continued criminality on behalf of this so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, it's important to know that this is funded by U.S. government, by U.S. taxpayers. It will not look good when history will judge this.
Jan Egeland, you have the GHF, four sites where people are gunned down when they try to get food, replacing 400 sites coordinated by the United Nations. Gaza, your organization, Norwegian Refugee Council, have been on the ground for a long time in Gaza. Can you talk right now about Israel allowing airdrops? How effective is that? And how do you recreate these 400 sites?
But there was indeed 400 sites when there was the ceasefire, when Israeli hostages were released and we were allowed to work. Israel broke off that in March. I hope you will all remember it was broken off by Israel itself after many hostages were released back into Israel, and we could feed the entire population in Gaza. Now, after all of these months of deliberate, systematic starvation of women and children in Gaza, even the U.S. government, the German government, the British government, and the French government, those who have provided the arms to this indiscriminate bombing, say there is starvation. Now Netanyahu's government is saying, okay then, we're very afraid of sanctions now. And then they allow airdrops, which is the worst possible way of providing assistance. Who likes airdrops? Well, TV journalists like it, diplomats, politicians like it, because it's very photogenic. But one airdrop is 25 tons. That's 2.5 trucks. We need 60,000 tons of food per month in normal circumstances for more than 2 million people. 25 tons just dropped at random where anyone could pick them. I mean, Hamas could pick them up. Anyone could get them there in their heads. Certainly the people that we in the Norwegian Refugee Council were feeding, which were single mother-led families, widows with many children, the disabled, the elderly, they will get nothing of this of this aid, as they will get nothing from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which was conjured by Israeli military and some strange American people who were working with this most extreme government in the history of Israel to substitute the Norwegian Refugee Council and all of the other organizations which were there for a generation and have a proven track record. We were closed down by Hamas when we yielded their pressure to influence our work. They invaded our offices. We have a track record of standing up against Hamas, as we have a track record in standing up to the kind of manipulation that is now undertaken by the Israeli war machine in Gaza. It's we who have the professionality to be able to do this job.
Can you get food aid and humanitarian aid into Gaza now? Outside of airdrops, how many trucks are needed per day?
Well, we in Norwegian Refugee Council and nearly all other aid groups are still denied all access. There is a group of agencies, UN agencies, two or three non-governmental organizations, health organizations mainly, that are now authorized to do some work. I believe they get in 100, 150, it could be a little bit more today, trucks per day. The minimum is 600 trucks. So after full starvation for many months and very little food coming in, some at these chaotic hunger games organized by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in the south, but beyond that, very little aid. Now it's 1/6 of what it would be in normal times. It's an insult to Trump, to Starmer, to Macron, and to Merz, these leaders who say that they want this to change. It's not Netanyahu who's calling the shots. The tail is wagging the dog here, and everybody can see it.
President Trump contradicted Netanyahu and said he saw the pictures that these people look hungry, right? Palestinians look hungry. What can Trump do at this point as the major weapons supplier to Israel?
Well, the key is with the U.S. administration is very clear, really. If they tell the Netanyahu government to do the right thing, they will do so. What's the right thing? It's to open all of the border crossings so that all of the organizations that have a distribution apparatus on the inside, including us, but But we are 100 organizations that are present in Gaza, have trusted local staff. We can feed people in the 400 distribution points that we had before Israel closed everything down. That's what Trump should be asking for. And then he should take, or rather American forces or international forces should control of the border crossings. I wrote a letter to the US administration, to the European Union, to international leaders in October after the horrific Hamas massacres in Israel, and said, if you let one side control aid access to the civilians on the other side, you will ask for trouble. I warned against it. You have to have an international control mechanism. I hope they will listen now, and as I think they understand that their fingerprints, I mean, now talking about these Western powers, fingerprints is now all over a crime scene, and history will judge.
Jan Egeland, I want to thank you for being with us, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking to us from Oslo. Norway, Spain, Ireland have joined the majority of nations in the world in recognizing the state of Palestine. France will do so in September. There's a UN conference going on right now, run by France and Saudi Arabia around Palestine. Coming up, two leading Israeli human rights groups have accused Israel of genocide. Back in 20 seconds. By the late Randy Weston, performed the song when we spoke with Democracy Now! In 2012. Check out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Two leading Israeli human rights groups, B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel, have accused Israel of genocide in Gaza. Yuli Novak, the executive director of B'Tselem, spoke in Jerusalem Monday.
The report we are publishing today is one we never imagined we would have to write. But in recent months, we have been witnessing a reality that has left us no choice but to acknowledge the truth. Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We're joined right now by Sadiq Mikhaeli, International Outreach Director for the Israeli group B'Tselem. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain your findings at this point.
Thank you, Amy. Yes, the report we issued yesterday essentially finds that Israel's policies in the Gaza Strip, their catastrophic consequences, together with statements by senior Israelis, together with the documentation of what these statements led to, points us to the unequivocal conclusion that Israel is taking a systematic, organized action to destroy Palestinian society in Gaza. And this is the textbook definition of genocide. The report also says that this action by Israel is a reflection of a genocidal regime, and therefore there is also a grave risk that, given certain circumstances, the genocide Israel's actions will spread to other areas where Palestinians live under Israel's control.
This isn't the first time B'Tselem has been the first Israeli group to speak out. In 2021, you called Israel an apartheid regime. Lay out your findings, what you document, what you call the clear intentional attack on civilians in order to destroy a group.
Yes. So, first of all, we rely both on witness testimonies collected by our field researchers in Gaza who have been evacuated, but evacuated but continue to collect information and personal accounts from Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we also rely on credible information from many other sources. So this is the body of information. We then looked at what Israeli policymakers said, and we in fact provided a very long list of these statements, and essentially there is no there's nothing that has happened that wasn't stated openly by Israeli policymakers. The catastrophic, the horrific consequences of this that we list in our report, aside from the huge, massive killing of civilians, you discussed it earlier in the program, reaching up to at least 60,000 people, of them tens of thousands of women and children. There is also the mass starvation now, as a matter of policy by Israel, of 2 million Gazans. There is the destruction, the razing of entire cities. There is a destruction of everything that is necessary to maintain human life. This is what we see in Gaza, and none of it was a secret. It's been known for months. This has been going on for 22 months. Israeli policies have been clear, yet this has not led to a concerted, to effective international action to stop this. And one of the things we say in the report, and one of the things we called for together with our colleagues from Physicians for Human Rights Israel yesterday, is for the international community as well as Israelis to take all action in the framework of international law to get this to stop, to get this to end. Now, yes, B'Tselem is an Israeli organization. We are based in Israel, and we're also made up of Israelis and Palestinians. And I think one of the important novelties, or the things that we say in this report that breaks new ground, is not just the discussion of what's happening on the ground right now in Gaza, but the discussion of the root causes of this Israeli genocide. And we call the report our genocide. We look at the history, and we also look at this horrific, horrendous trigger of October 7th. The Hamas atrocities were perpetrated against Israeli civilians and have led to this terrible trauma that Israelis feel, were then exploited cynically by our government in order to push policies that the government and very powerful members of our government have been trying to promote even before, as I said, this massacre of October 7th. So the report essentially looks at not just the reality on the ground right now, but looks at why we have been, what made it possible for us to reach this horrendous stage where Israel is perpetrating genocide, where the international community is not stopping this, where Israelis, the majority of Israelis, are either silent or supportive of this genocide, and what can we say and do as people inside Israel, both Israelis and Palestinians who are operating within Israeli civil society, in order to stop it now.
As we reported in headlines just yesterday on Monday in the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot and killed a Palestinian activist and teacher, 31-year-old Olda Mohammed Hadaleen, who played a key role in the production of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land. Residents identified his killer as Yinon Levy, an Israeli settler who was sanctioned by the Biden administration. The Trump administration lifted those sanctions. There's videos showing him firing a gun. Talk about the significance of this and the violence in the West Bank as well. We just have 30 seconds.
Yes, absolutely. I think, first of all, so I think this is just a clear example of how exposed Palestinian lives are under Israeli occupation and apartheid, both in the West Bank and certainly in Gaza. The lack of any consequences, we expect Yinon Levy to not have to pay a significant price, is the result of policy, and it's also the result of international inaction. And it is so symbolic that the Trump administration essentially lifted the sanctions, the very meager sanctions that were imposed by the Biden administration on this individual, but it's an entire system of impunity and support for this settler terror that has been responsible, and that we see as responsible, for the killing of dear Odeh Hadaleen, who was really a friend to us all. Anyone who was active in the Masaf Riyata area knew Ode, stayed with him, spent time with him, and listened to him. He was an inspiring,
Sarit
and amazing
Mikhaeli,
activist.
We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you for being with us with the Israeli Human Rights Group at Salem.
Hey Kingston, looking to conserve water and save money? Utilities Kingston is once again offering its popular repurposed rain barrels. They help conserve treated water, reduce your environmental impact, and give new life to materials that might otherwise end up in a landfill. Rain barrels are just $71, including delivery, and are